Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 4th of October, Anno Domini 2014. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. All right, all you whiners, the kvetching is just about over. From the early looks of Windows 10, it's a long overdue concession to the fact that Windows users prefer things the way they used to be. A video tour hosted by Windows VP Joe Belfiore is most notable for what Microsoft's new operating system is missing, as well as what's returned from the pre-Windows 8 days. Rather than carry on Windows 8's strange hybrid of animated tiles and start menu-less desktop, Windows 10 has an interface more akin to that of Windows 7. Those colorful Metro or modern tiles haven't disappeared completely. They've been moved to the start menu, but they're less in-your-face and mission-critical than they were in Windows 8. Because of that, customers and businesses are likely to be ecstatic. Neither of them like Windows 8 much, to put it politely. The numbers don't lie. According to Net Applications data, about half of the computers in the world right now are running Windows 7. In second place, with about 24% install base, is the never-say-die Windows XP. It's 13 years old. Microsoft doesn't even support it anymore. Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 combine for about half of XP's install base, roughly 12%. The world may be moving toward mobile devices en masse, but people still use laptops and desktops for good reasons. They remain the best tools for sitting out at a desk and working. Windows is best at its most boring as a blank napkin for productivity. There's nothing wrong with that. People need it. The less Windows feels like a laptop or desktop OS, the more people shun it. But while Windows 10 is a step backwards for the interface, its underlying strategy is an ambitious leap forward. Under the hood, it's a far bolder attempt to meet the needs of both desktop and mobile users than Windows 8's hybrid weirdness. With Windows 10, Microsoft is trying to achieve several big goals at once. Make 75% of its desktop users finally consider an upgrade, attract more developers, and elevate its mobile OS beyond also RAN status. Those last two are where Microsoft can gain the most ground. At its core, Windows 10 is an attempt to realize the dream of write once, run anywhere for Windows development. It promises the ability to write software that will magically morph to fit any phone, tablet, desktop, or other device. I can't wait to see that happen. You won't have to pick a way to interact with the software, which was one of Windows 8's fatal flaws. Instead, Windows 10 will pick the best software experience for your device. So, and by the way, it is Windows 10, not Windows 9.
Yeah, yeah, what happened to Windows 9?
Yeah, that's a big switch.
They skipped it.
Yeah.
They skipped Windows 9, went right to Windows 10, because let's face it, 9 is just a number, 10 is a rating.
And that also...
Oh. No, that's me. That's not yeah. them.
No, it makes
that's
sense.
That's me.
It also changes their every other alternate number.
Right, right.
Yeah. Problem.
Yeah. Right. It's still crap. It's just not... It's different.
just
right.
Just a different number.
It'll be fine. I've been using Windows 8.1, and other than the Metro interface, which I understand and have come to terms with, but that's not really what I want out of a computer.
No. I mean, most folks...
It's fast. It's easy to use. Office still loads like a pig. Holy moly, it takes a day and a half to load. Anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10. And your choices are, woohoo, I can't wait, I'm intrigued, I'm not interested, and win what now? And so far, we have 31 votes, and I'm intrigued is tied with win what now at 10 votes apiece, followed by I'm not interested, and only three of you can't wait. So I know you'll have more to say about this. Heaven knows you'll have more to say about this.
Oh, they always do.
So if you scroll down the right side of the page, if you scroll down the page on the right side under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. And if you click on that, it will take you to our forums. There's a shock. And if you look there, the second forum set is called Poll Discussion. And if you look, if you go there, you'll see that the very first one is for October 14, Windows 10. Two posts so far. Please join in the chat there. And, of course, stick around with us and give us a call, particularly if you're actually interested in Windows 10 and waiting for it. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Well, Windows 8 was dead out of the water anyways. I mean, if, even in the reviews, before it even hit the, you know, the stores, people were already complaining about it because it was a whole different look.
Yeah.
And I mean, it just changed the whole paradigm of the way you interacted with Windows.
If you would have separated the touch version and the desktop version, it might not have been received
given,
so bad.
You should have given the customers the choice.
Windows 8 and Windows 8 Touch.
And the issue here is Windows wants one code base for everything. And they picked mobile.
They lost.
Yeah.
Which was really... I don't know that it was the wrong thing, but it was too early. It is certainly very possible that 15 years from now, people will be using mobile mostly and desktops only if you're a writer or a programmer.
It could have been all the same code with like a question at startup. Do you want the touch interface? Yes or no?
Right. Oh, I see you're running on a desktop. Shall we load the non-touch interface?
Yeah. So, yeah. But I read an interesting article that Microsoft is potentially leaving billions of dollars on the floor by not charging people. You had mentioned the giant base of Windows 9, XP users, 500 million XP users. Charge them $1 a month to maintain patches. That's $6 billion a year.
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting is Windows 10 will be free for Windows 8 and 8.1 users, but will cost everybody else.
Yeah.
So now the people who are on XP will pretend they can't afford it. Some can't, and I get that. I do get that. Most people just, I'm running XP and I'm happy. No, you've got your head buried in the sand, your butt is out there exposed, and you think you're happy. Yep.
Most average people never bought a new OS anyway. They're using whatever OS came on their computer.
Right.
So it's the computer hardware company's fault for making the hardware last too long.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, darn that 15-year-old computer that still works and is running the XP it came with.
Exactly.
It's terrible.
Well, it's a difficult issue for Microsoft, and I do get that. I truly do. You know, they don't make money if you don't buy a new operating system, but they made XP so ubiquitous and works just well enough.
Yeah.
You know?
And then Vista had so many problems
that
it got everybody a bad taste in their mouth, and then 7 couldn't really overcome from that.
Right.
Until everyone started getting 7 on their new machines, and so that's pretty close to XP. In fact, Microsoft even ran some commercials. Basically, this is Windows 7? It's good.
Yeah.
Here, would you like to try this new operating system? Oh, it's the Windows 7. It's been shipping for a couple of years already.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Oh, really? That's Windows 7. I guess it's okay.
I guess it's okay. But people are having a tough time with it. And we'll see if Windows 10 gets accepted. You know, we'll see if it...
like I say, if they're given the choice, you know, to go back to the old desktop, that's what folks are comfortable with. I'm sorry, like you said, who's going to be reaching over their desk to put their finger on the screen and doing that type of stuff? No. When you're in the work environment, most folks at their desk, they want a keyboard, they want a nice screen to look at, and a familiar interface.
Yep.
And it was just not very intuitive the way they set up those cubes and setting stuff up because it was such a learning curve. I mean, Windows, for the most part, the start bar and everything else has been there since Windows 3.1.
Right.
If you want to go back even farther, Windows 286, if anybody remembers that. But, you know, it's always been that way. Granted, they've renamed some programs and they've shifted some things around. Those were minor things. And just like you say, when you get a new car, they all drive the same. Right. They just move some of the controls somewhere.
Right.
That they can do with. Windows 8 was a whole new, like, what the heck do I do with this? I don't even know where to open the door and turn on the engine.
Yep.
Type of thing.
Well, and the irony there is that Windows Phone was revolutionary because it wasn't a copy of the iPhone.
Right, 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 right.
And that's what made it so nice. Turn his mic back on, Dave.
Oh, whose mic?
No, I'm sorry, that's you.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's working better now when your mic is on too. But I lost my train of thought now.
CRS.
Yeah. Right. I didn't walk through the door. I swear I didn't.
Yeah.
There's doorways that have that brain wiping function.
Right.
Where were we?
I'm lost too now.
I know.
Are you? Do you remember where we were? I was listening. I was paying attention. Perfect sense.
Right. It's how much better the old Windows was.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Windows and Windows Phone was different because it wasn't a copy
of
the iPhone.
Right.
And it worked good on a mobile device.
Right.
But not really that good on a desktop.
Right, and that's the problem that they had when they caught the wrong.
When everyone has a touchscreen desktop tablet thing, when this concept of a laptop goes away. See, I'd rather have speech recognition and artificial intelligence than a touchscreen.
Yeah.
I want to tell my computer what to do and have it do it.
That's right, Microsoft. Never mind the easy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we simulate that with Siri, and there are people who apparently hallucinate that she actually talks to them. But the reality is it's not artificial intelligence. It's not even any sort of intelligence. It's just algorithms.
Really powerful
programming. And it's important that I think in the future we need... See, I keep saying, you know, when we used to get personal digital assistants, PDAs,
mm-hmm.
I used to tell people, I don't need an assistant. I need a mommy. I need someone who will come along behind me and remind me, now, honey, you have to do this. No, don't sit down. You have to go do this right now.
You got that already.
Yeah.
It's called a wife.
It's called a wife, right? But she didn't follow me around at work. But the point is, it wasn't really... intelligent, it just was an algorithm.
Yep.
And they should be, I agree with you. If I had to make a choice, I would be rather working on that. I would rather see them working on that than tweaking the UI one more time.
Oh, speaking of smart devices, did you see that new bend test that they did? Samsung.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was Conan O'Brien. It's a Conan O'Brien thing. Yeah.
That is cool.
Yeah.
But on the real side of that, Consumer Reports actually did some quantitative testing. It takes about 90 pounds of force to bend an iPhone 6.
Yep.
And so then they tested a whole bunch of other phones. They're all about the same, that in that 80 to 90 range. There was one, I think it was an HTC that was 110. But most of them are in that 90. So you have to exert 90 pounds of force to bend it.
And when they tried to bend the Nokia, it broke the machine.
Yeah. And then there were those two kids in Britain that YouTube filmed themselves on YouTube.
What idiots!
Yeah.
Yeah, and well, somewhere near the end, someone said, well, couldn't we get in trouble for this? Or, no, it's Apple's fault that you went into a store and vandalized their product.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't keep my phone in my pocket. I keep it in a belt thing. You do.
Yeah.
And it hasn't bent.
No.
Well, Apple has
it's that thin again. The thinner it is, the more likely it is to bend.
Right. They have pursued thin and light. It's their mantra. It's like they're a supermodel. I had a grape today, and I'm so stuffed. And I get that. You know, there are people who think thin is gorgeous, and really they just want to marry Biafran babies. But the basic idea is there comes a point where what you really want is just the film... layer that lays in your hand limply, I suppose,
yep. mm-hmm.
that you can then see and then
that
roll
was
it
Andromeda.
Up
the right. Flexi would pull out, and you, when you were done reading it, you pushed it back in.
The one I saw, it's a prototype, but the one I want is a thin band that sits on your wrist, and it projects the screen on your arm.
Yep,
that's the one I don't know if I can get through the hair, but that's the one I want. And then you tap your hand, and it figures out where you tapped.
Oh, for typing?
For whatever you're doing, for opening things, swiping, double-clicking, whatever it is you're doing. That one makes actually a lot of sense.
And with Pico projectors, that's almost possible these days.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the cars are coming with heads-up displays.
Right. So
and
we're
coming down into
the
regular range of cars now. It's been in the luxury cars for a while.
Yeah, right.
What was it? Not the Hopper. There's that one car that had the center headlight that turned. 50 years ago, and the whole car flopped. And now a lot of cars are doing turning headlights. Yeah.
All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the phone, stay on the line. We'll get to you right after the break, I promise. If you're not on the phone, I don't know why not. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece on the line. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hello. How are you today?
Peachy. How are you?
Oh, good. I love the mommy comment. That was great.
Thanks.
I agree. I need a mommy.
I do. I need a mommy.
I just wanted to say I got a Windows phone recently,
yeah?
And I really like it.
Good for you.
Not so much for apps. I think the app store is a little, the Windows store is a little lacking in some useful apps. But I like the phone. So I think it's easy to use. It's great. Very customizable. But that being said, I think Microsoft should step up and offer everybody with Windows 8 or 8.1 on their desktop a free upgrade.
They're going to.
Everybody?
Yeah. Windows. If you have Windows 8 or 8.1... Now, I don't know if it was pre-installed or just that you have it, but I don't know that they can tell the difference at this point. If you've got 8.0 or 8.1, it's a free upgrade to 10. Everybody else will have to pay for it, but 8.8 people will get it for free.
That's a great thing to do because I did not know that. And it's like everybody I know that does have it, which is just a few people, but they've got touchscreen computers and they're not using touchscreens. They say, I hate touching my screen, you know?
Everybody does. First, it gets a little greasy. I don't care how clean you are. And so over time, that builds up. And then you have to turn it off in order to clean the screen. Otherwise, every bad thing happens.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
Although, take a look at someone who doesn't have a touchscreen. There's fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, there is.
Because they touch it.
Well, but it also means that people who are used to going, now look at this thing here. See that? Blah, 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 blah. And somebody else will do this. Look at this thing here, and the next thing you know, it's off the screen, and the charm menu is up and everything. It's just ridiculous. But, yeah, I'm personally looking forward to 10. I do actually have a Windows laptop, and I'm looking forward to putting 10 on it.
I think it's a great thing that they moved the tiles to the start menu and a little bit. Because I don't mind the tiles. I just don't want them on my desktop.
Right, and I don't want them instead of my desktop.
Exactly. And I read something when I was looking at stuff when I heard the announcement, and one of the people that did a write-up on it said that Windows 8 actually opened programs differently than using that tile page, that it actually opened... There's two browsers.
Yes, the stuff that opens on the desktop is different from the stuff that opens from the modern menu, and even if it's the same program, it's a different instance.
Right.
The other thing that kind of
browsers for the desktop, and then there was in the background, and I said, you know, to myself, what a weird way to run an operating system.
Well, and here's an interesting thing. I have not had a chance to do much testing on this yet. But no matter how long I leave it at, let's say I boot it up, it comes up to the modern interface. I leave it at the modern interface for, let's say, an hour. And then I go to the desktop. The first thing that happens is super anti-spyware loads. Does that mean it and my antivirus and malware bytes and everything else aren't loaded when I'm at the modern interface, and that they don't load until there's a real desktop back there?
Sounds like it.
Also, when I leave up the modern interface, I don't extend to my second screen automatically, which I do from the desktop. So clearly, it's radically different. It's not really part of the desktop at all. And that leads me to believe that when I'm at that modern interface, I don't have antivirus, I don't have anti-spyware, I don't have malware, I don't have anything.
Yeah, you're wide open.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a bizarre way to run an operating system. I think they thought everybody wanted touchscreens, and it's different for a handheld.
No. You have to understand they're making it easy for themselves.
Yeah.
That's what that's about.
Now, bringing up the thing about the antivirus and all that, and going back to the Windows Phone, when I tried to put an antivirus on it, there were none available. Then I went to a third-party Windows Phone site that talked all about the phone, and everybody says the phone doesn't need an antivirus at all because it's supposedly so secure of an operating system for a phone.
No, absolutely. Windows makes nothing but absolutely secure operating systems.
I got some swampland for you.
But I can't even find one in the App Store to put on.
Yeah. Nobody's going to...
There's a couple of reasons for that. There wasn't one for Apple for the longest time either, because Apple did not allow anyone to get down to the level that an antivirus has to go to put the hooks in to save things. Even though repeatedly, time and time again, they were showing that there were viruses that were able to hit an iPhone. Apple didn't make that available for the longest time. It is now, though. Right, Steve?
There are security programs, but the threat model is different.
And just like
You're more likely to get a malicious app than a virus, partly because it's a different OS code.
Well, and it's the same thing on Android.
Yeah.
What they're protecting against are malicious apps, but for the longest time, Apple didn't have that protection.
And like he stated, just the apps alone for the Windows Phone are very few and far between.
Right.
I mean, that's probably the lowest thing on their priority list right now. They're just trying to get regular apps to...
I get that, but if I'm somebody who wants to steal stuff out of your phone...
Oh, heck yeah.
What operating system am I going to attack? Well, how about the one that doesn't have any antivirus?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm with you, Mark. I think that's a big thing that's a hole that must be fixed.
But again, that's something that they'd have to think and put into a priority.
Now it
but
is
there
possible.
Are a few that are out available now.
Right, mm-hmm. But you can't get them from the Windows Store at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to.
I'm just waiting to see if T-Mobile rolls out the 8.1 update for my phone that's supposedly supposed to come through and if things will change.
Right.
There's an update available, but it hasn't been put out for my phone.
Right. And that's the other thing that just makes me insane about these phone things. I don't want to be dependent on a carrier because carriers notoriously are hated by everyone. And I don't want to wait on my carrier. I want my phone to be updated when there's an update for my phone, not when the carrier thinks it's okay to put out an update for my phone.
Right, I went through the threads on T-Mobile site, and they're going, "Oh, it's coming," and the threads have been there since the middle of summer.
Right,
and still, it's not available for this Lumia that I've got.
Right.
So, but anyways, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful afternoon.
Have fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have to agree with him. There's no reason to not make those updates come through quicker. I get it when it's a handset manufacturer that's holding them up. They have to make sure that update works with their phone. That part I get. But the carrier only has to send it to us.
Yeah.
They're not making any changes.
They're not getting any money for it is probably the problem.
That's part of the problem. I'm sure they're holding back until somebody pays them. Probably from the carrier or whatever. I get it. I get it. But I don't like it, but I do get it. So I guess that'll just continue to happen until it stops. That was cleverly put. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Rich from Irondequoit. Welcome, Rich. What's up?
Hi, guys. I'm just calling with an update from last week with the Google update problem.
Yeah.
I did find a fix by going onto YouTube. A friend, an IT person that I know, helped me out a little bit, and we went on to YouTube and found a YouTube video of maybe 30 seconds long showing me exactly how to go into the registry and fix it with the ones and zeros type thing.
All right. Now, your problem, if I remember correctly, was when you tried to upgrade something, it said it was locked by the admin?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just Googled that phrase or that saying or whatever, and right popped up one YouTube video and looked at it. I knew you guys said to take it to somebody to fool around with the registry, but this had one little simple fix. I went in, fixed the 1 to a 0 or whatever it was and rebooted the machine, and everything is fine, and it updates every time.
Yeah, but the big gamble is that the guy you found the video of, some guy somewhere on the internet, knew what he was doing,
right?
And didn't cause problems either. So that's the danger of editing the registry.
Right, I understand, and I know you guys, like I said, with the help of this IT person that I know, he said that, you know, I probably wouldn't goof anything up if I just did this, and again,
and then got out.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree with you guys.
That's
the key. I know it was a gamble for me to go mess around in there in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but you know what? You've had the adventure. You lived through it. Time to move on.
Yeah, I just thought I'd call you with the update.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Rich. Congratulations. Bye-bye. Yeah, and please don't.
I still
don't
won't
think
recommend
is,
doing it.
Right, I was just about to say, don't think this is us recommending playing around in the registry. It's really, really a bad idea.
It's really easy to screw something
up.
Yeah,
I refuse to. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's all you have to do is change the 1 to a 0. But if you do it in the wrong place, you make your entire computer
or you
not
select
work.
The wrong item, because within those entries within the registry, multiple things are set to either 1s or 0s, what folks don't understand.
There could
be different listings, and if he clicked on the wrong one...
And there's so much redundant duplication in different registry keys, you have to really make sure they're... I hate editing it myself, and I know how.
Right, exactly.
I'm always scared of messing something up, because it's so easy to mess something up.
Right, and the registry is so delicate, it's the only place where all of those things are. It's another reason I like Linux, because... When I have, when I want to go in and edit a config file for a particular program, if I screw it up, I lose that program, but that's the only thing I lose.
Yeah.
If you screw up the registry sufficiently, you can't boot the system.
In order to fix the registry.
In order to fix the registry, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, Linda from Greece. Hiya, Linda. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are ya?
Peachy, how are you?
I want to thank you for the best birthday present I got from you guys.
You're welcome.
Okay, now my question. Steve, the update came out. I have an iPad Air and an iTouch. Is it safe to do it now or should I still wait? I haven't done it yet.
Well, yeah, you're referring to the iOS 8 update. The 8.0 came out a little while ago, and we always recommend people don't install the 0.0. Let someone else figure out the problems. Well, 0.0 had a lot of problems, so 0.01 came out. It had even more problems, and Apple pulled it back in. So now 0.02 is out. So if you did upgrade to 8.0, then you should upgrade to 8.02, because that fixes a lot of those problems.
No, I've still got 7.
Yeah. We are still hearing reports of Wi-Fi problems with 802. So I haven't updated myself yet. I'm considering updating my iPod as a test to see how that works, because I use my iPad more. But I'm personally waiting for 803 just to see how the rest of those shake out.
That's why I was calling, because I thought to myself, I'm going to call and ask the guys if I should do it, because I know once you do it, you can't go back.
Right.
Now, what is the advantage of 8 over 7?
There's a couple of new features that they have added into it. One of the biggest ones we're seeing with people is the iCloud family sharing. So it's now possible to share files, applications and movies, TV shows, between multiple Apple IDs in your family. And we are seeing a lot of that's been a request forever, you know, how to merge, you know, my Apple ID with somebody else's, but then it becomes, how do I split it when we got divorced and I don't want all of my ex-wife's stuff on my phone anymore. So that's one of the big features they've added. Right. Apple does have a list on their website of all the latest new features. Most of the features they've added take advantage, you only take advantage of them on the iPhone 6 so far. But we're starting to see more and more stuff is going to come out eventually. There's a better photo editing app. The health stuff that's going to be coming out only works on the newer phones that have the health monitoring built in. So for the older phones, there isn't that much that's different, other than the sake of having a new number.
Yeah, I don't have a phone. As I said, I have an iPad Air and an iTouch. I don't have the phone. So, in other words, I'm not really getting anything if I don't have a phone?
Well, the biggest thing you'll see is the new Photos app adds more editing capability in the Photos app, so you may not need to buy a third-party Photos app.
I don't use that.
Yeah. There are differences in how messaging works. You can send more stuff through the iMessage app.
Oh, okay.
Including audio and video now.
But only to another iMessaging person.
Right, which is another Apple device, yeah.
In other words, my cousin has an iPad Retina, and I've got an iPad, so I could send her a video because she's got an iPad.
Yep, you can use the messaging app for free messages over the internet rather than on a cell phone where you would send a text message.
Oh.
And so that allows people to message other people with iPads and with Macs and with iPod Touches. And so it's in essence text messaging for non-cell phones,
right?
But only Apple devices so far. There are third-party programs that work across to other devices as well.
Okay, will you let us know when it's safe to download it?
Yep. I'm keeping an eye on that myself because I haven't updated my stuff yet. My iPad doesn't have enough free space on it, so that's a big limitation.
How much free space do you need?
You need about 5 gigabytes free space, or you update it on your computer. So that's the big way to do it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 41 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on the truly great and solely
member-supported
Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Scott, our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York, on the line. Welcome, Scott. What's up?
Well, I wanted to give you another advantage of iOS 8.02.
All right.
I still own just an iPhone 5, and not the 5C or 5S, whatever it is. And I own an iPad, which is even older. It's like a year and a half, 2 years old for now. Well, once I upgraded to iOS 8.02, I should say my iPad is only Wi-Fi capable. Once I upgraded to iOS 8.02, I discovered that when both the iPad and the iPhone are on the same Wi-Fi, I can answer and talk to a phone through my iPad.
Oh, that's neat.
Wow.
I hadn't heard that.
I'm really excited about that. Because the volume is much larger and it's easier to deal with.
Right.
So I can have my iPhone is in one room and my iPad's in my office, and I can answer the phone. I think I haven't tried it yet. I think I can even call on my iPhone through my iPad.
Interesting.
The phone app is on the iPad.
Yep.
I just haven't been able to use it because it's only Wi-Fi.
That's a feature called continuity. And it will also work the same with macOS 10 Yosemite. So if your phone rings, it happens to be in the other room, you can answer that phone call on your Mac.
Ooh, wow.
That's really
nice.
Yep.
Yeah. And part of that feature is something they're calling handoff. So you can start a call on your computer and then walk out of the house and continue the call on your phone.
Oh, boy, I didn't know that. That's very nice.
That's really a nice feature. I like that a lot.
Yeah, the computer part of it requires 10.10, but with iOS 8 on all your devices, it will work that way, too.
And 10.10 isn't out yet.
It's not out yet, yeah. Right. See, that's a lot of the things with iOS 8 goes along with features in 10.10, and until 10.10 has come out, some of the usefulness of iOS 8 just isn't there yet.
Right.
Well, excellent. I can hang up my iPad now.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks, Scott. That's very cool. I really like that. I like that a lot. Go ahead.
So they've done that in the past with iMessage. You get a message on one device, it can be echoed to all your devices. So whatever one you're standing in front of, you can answer it on. But
right.
It's neat that it does it with phone calls now.
We should mention to all our Apple users and listeners, it appears that there may be a serious bug with the reset all setting options in iOS 8. Causing users who activate that feature to lose all of their iWork documents stored in iCloud Drive. According to multiple posters on the internet, using the Reset All Settings option under General Reset, has caused documents to be permanently deleted from the iCloud drive. The reset all settings option explicitly says no data or media will be deleted, and it is meant to reset all user preferences to the default out-of-the-box settings. That the option is deleting iCloud drive documents appears to be a serious bug, though it may be limited to Apple's own iWork apps like Pages, Keynote, and Numbers. One user had all of his iWork documents wiped by using Reset All Settings, while other app information remained in iCloud. In testing, using Reset All Settings deleted all iWork's documents stored in iCloud on the iPhone and on iCloud.com. After allowing time for syncing to a Mac running OS 10 Yosemite, all of the documents disappeared from that machine as well. Preview and text edit documents, which cannot be accessed on the iPhone, remained untouched on the Mac. There appears to be no simple way to recover iCloud Drive documents that have been erased by Reset All Settings in Yosemite. And several people who have been affected by the bug are now in contact with Apple support in an effort to retrieve their documents. A Mavericks user was, however, able to recover his files from a backup folder. And OS X Yosemite users, who are few and far between because it's still in beta, may also have luck with recovering files via Time Machine. One user said that Apple was waiting on engineers to investigate the issue, while another said his account had been placed in troubleshooting mode to attempt to recover the data. So users who have iCloud Drive enabled may want to refrain from using Reset All Settings options on any of their devices for the time being in order to avoid accidentally erasing important documents stored in iCloud Drive.
Yep. And because one of the features of iCloud Drive is syncing to your other devices.
Right.
So it thinks if you deleted them on one, it's going to delete them on all the other ones because it's supposed to sync.
Right, right, right.
So that's a big bug. Hopefully they'll fix soon. So
yep.
That, we're anxiously awaiting that 8.03 update.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Victor. What's up?
Hi, guys. On my Windows 7 desktop, I'm on the New York Yankees website. Now, when I click on an article, I get about two paragraphs, and then there's a button that says more. I figured that's going to be, you know, more of the article, and I click on it, nothing happens. Now, when I go to the dreaded Internet Explorer, I don't have that more button. I have the whole complete article. Could something be blocking it for some reason? This just started about a week ago.
And what browser are you using?
Firefox, the latest one.
Firefox.
I don't have any problem with any other site. This is the only site. And it does work in Internet Explorer.
What it sounds like to me is you've got some sort of JavaScript thing that's being blocked on Firefox and not on Internet Explorer.
Okay.
Generally speaking, I find that whenever I'm having a trouble with a site, I open it on Internet Explorer. And it works because Internet Explorer doesn't block anything. It doesn't care. Just come on in. Everybody come on in. So while Firefox may be a little too zealous in blocking certain things, you can calm that down for a particular site. So
are you running something like NoScript or AdBlock Plus or one of those?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am.
That may well be it right there. I have found... and I haven't figured out which one it is yet, but the other day I was actually on Microsoft's OneDrive. They all end in Drive now. Ever since Google made Google Drive, now they're all Drive something. I was on OneDrive playing around with Word Online, and on every one of my devices it worked great except for one of my Chromebooks where I can't type, and it's clearly some extension, and I just haven't figured out which one yet.
Well, I'm looking. I just clicked on AdBlock Plus, and it says I've got it checked where it says disable on the Yankee site. And
well,
then there's other things.
Check NoScript as well.
What's that?
Check NoScript as well.
Oh, NoScript. I think I have that too someplace.
Yeah. So yeah. You would want to enable scripting on the Yankees website.
And honestly, I'm not entirely certain you need both of those running simultaneously. Although, if you're on a desktop or a fast enough laptop, it doesn't really matter because...
There's a lot of overlap between them, but there's some differences between them, too.
Okay, Steve, you said you don't need to run what?
No. Never mind that. For now, see if you can tell NoScript not to run on the Yankee site.
Okay.
Or allow scripting on the Yankee. I think it's a positive.
Yeah.
NoScript. Okay, I'll try that. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. You're welcome. That's the big thing nowadays. We have so many things that will prevent. I prevent pop-ups, and so there was a site that I was doing some actual work on, and when I went to save, it wouldn't save, and it wouldn't save, and it wouldn't save. And just for the heck of it, I turned off pop-ups, and a pop-up comes up and says, "Are you sure you want to save?" Yes, yes, I want to save. But until I turned off the no pop-ups for that site, I never saw that.
Mm-hmm. And I've always found those questions to be silly. Of course I want to save.
Right.
It should be, are you sure you want to quit without saving?
Right, right. I get that. Yeah. Stop me from doing something stupid. But saving, how is that stupid?
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yep. And I bet this more button on that website does try to invoke a JavaScript to show more of the story.
Right in that place. If you clicked on that right now, would it actually show up? Yep, it shows up right in the story. So what it's doing is there's a hidden div, and it's unhiding the div. Now it's hidden it again.
Yep.
And that's JavaScript, and you can't. And that's why it's not working for him, because he's got no script or some other thing that's blocking JavaScript running.
Let me disable JavaScript and see if it stops working.
Right.
Oh, it jumped me to a whole brand new page to show me the entire article instead of displaying it, which it should do. If the script doesn't work, it should still show you the stuff you're looking for.
Right.
But it jumped me to a brand new page with all of the article on it.
Right, right. Now, did it bring you to a brand new page or did it do a pop-up?
New tab.
Oh, new tab, okay.
Yep.
But yeah, so we get kind of nuts in doing this. You know, we add a thing that will stop ad block. We'll put in ad block. We'll put in no script. We'll
You're
put
being
in
polite
what
to
it does.
Somebody.
Yeah.
It's the catch 22 because as soon as you created no script, the advertisers figured out a way to make things that aren't scripts.
Right.
And so we put ad block in, and then they'll figure out a way to get around that.
Like we've said for years, it's a game of leapfrog. Yep. It's always been a game of leapfrog. They put up one thing, they jump over it. Now we got to find out something else to jump over that. And it just keeps going around and around and around. It hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it was with viruses and everything else. Yep. And
there actually is a feature now in AdBlock Plus that they have something called acceptable ads.
Right.
So if you pay AdBlock Plus enough money, they will show your ad anyway.
Right. I've actually figured out how to get around AdBlock Plus. It's ridiculously simple. It is ridiculously simple. However, I'm in the process of selling that to somebody, so I'm not going to tell you what it is. But AdBlock Plus is not overly smart about ads, but it's smart enough, and that's what counts. It's a nice product. I use it on a lot of machines. I either have it turned off or I'm not running it on this machine. One of the things I've discovered is that there are a couple of sites I go to that take forever to come up. And I look down at the bottom and it says waiting for AdBlock Plus. And if I turn AdBlock Plus, those things pop right up. So I may have to disable it.
There's a program called Ghostery that we've talked about a few times in the past. It will tell you how many of these remote calls are being activated to fetch ads and to fetch this remote stuff. And,
right.
and I forget what website it was, but there was like 100 remote fetches. And no wonder that page is so slow to come up,
because it
had to load all
and
of
this
stuff.
That's probably a minor one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've turned off
this ad and that ad. Yep.
I had Ghostery on this machine at one point, but it was another one of those things that took an awfully long time to load. So.
Yeah, and because it's showing you so much, it's amazing some web pages how much crap they have on them.
Yep, exactly.
So everything we add to our browser to hide the crap slows the browser down.
Well,
there's so much crap.
It's got to do it,
Yep.
Because you don't want to be annoyed by it.
Well, and that's the catch 22, is that if we figure out ways to not see ads or not, see that stuff on websites, more and more websites are going to have to put up paywalls. So if you want to see our stuff, you got to pay us a buck or pay us $2.
Right.
And so that's the danger.
Well,
we're used to a free web.
For 20 years, they've been talking about micropayments. To come to my page will cost you a tenth of a penny.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is there aren't any really well set up clearinghouses for micropayments.
Yeah, a penny is as small as you could charge.
Right,
and then the transaction fee would be more than that's worth.
Right, right. But you make it automatic. You know, you have an app. But the first time you go, it says, "Do you want to pay a tenth of a penny to see our pages?"
Yep.
And then if you say yes, you can make that a persistent cookie, and then you will always pay that tenth of a penny. And maybe somebody is going to give you that opportunity. I don't know, but it's certainly an interesting way to do things. I mean, if I could write a blog that nobody had to pay for, and I could just get micropayments every time somebody went to it, as long as I'm interesting, I'll make money. And it won't cost you much, a tenth of a penny here and there. Big deal. You go there once a day. It's a week and a half before you've paid a penny. I mean, if you look at it that way, it's not a lot of money.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break, but don't give up. Although you've wasted an hour of your life with this show, you're going to get the opportunity again because I know you're a slow learner. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and for no discernible reason, you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites on the truly great and solely
member-supported
Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and Victor from Irondequoit is back on the line. What's up, Victor?
Well, I see to fix the problem.
Excellent.
I've got a program that's called Do Not Track Me. You ever heard of it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I just, it was checked where it says don't track my browsing here. I unchecked it, and I have everything I want on the site.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah, also on the tools menu where it says do not track me, I had that enabled also, so I'm wondering if it was just overkill.
Yeah, it might have been.
How bad is it when they track you? I mean, really?
Mostly, it isn't that bad. Mostly, they're not tracking you as an in. Mostly, they're not tracking you as an individual. They're tracking that somebody at this site came here and saw these kinds of stories, so that they can better figure out what type of stories, what people in what areas like the most.
And to show you hopefully relevant ads. So if you go to a lot of sports story pages, you'll see ads for sporting good products.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of companies are using these data now to figure out, you know, when they say, oh, this is a red state, this is a blue state. If a whole bunch of people go to conservative blogs and conservative websites, the chances are likely it's a red state. And if they go to a lot of more liberal blogs and liberal websites of various sorts, political websites, then it's more likely it's a blue state. And they can figure that out, what the ratios are when they do things like that. So, again, they're mostly not interested in you particularly, but in you as part of the community.
Now, am I more susceptible to a virus by not having this thing checked?
No.
No? Okay. That was my main concern.
Right.
They come in anyway.
Right. You're not less susceptible,
much,
but you're not more
susceptible. I just want to let you know that I've repaired it in case anybody else has the same problem.
Thank you, Victor. Yep. That's great to know. Thanks.
We've been seeing a surge in, I'd say, less than useful shopping tip extensions, where you get a message from a website that, you know, do you want to make your shopping experience better, and you say yes, and it installs this extension, and what it does is it starts showing you more and more and more and more ads. Well, it's making it better for them, not
right.
You
right, they didn't say who they were enhancing the shopping experience for, just that they were enhancing it. Oh, I love this one. This is such a great thing. Google has a new project. Actually, it's not new, but it's finally out. Project Ara, which is a modular cell phone. Pick the parts you need, add the parts you want, and build a completely customized phone to your specifications. As if a Lego-like customizable phone made of blocks wasn't enough, thanks to a modified version of Android L software, you'll be able to swap out parts from Google's Project R on modular phone without turning the device off. Obviously, this doesn't apply to the phone's display or CPU modules. Everything else is fair game, though. That means if you want a better camera or more memory at some point during the day, you can simply replace those modules on the fly without having to shut down and restart your phone. That could be very handy for something like the camera sensor. Perhaps you'll carry different imaging modules for various lighting conditions or types of photos. In fact, during the Linaro Connect USA event held earlier this month, Linaro is assisting with the software, Paul Aramenko, head of Project Aura for Google's ATAP group, asked this very question: why choose a phone for its camera when you could choose a camera for your phone? That's the gist of Project Aura, enabling the phone to be modified with various or new parts instead of requiring people to buy a whole new handset just to get a few new features. The concept makes sense, but it's still early days. It remains to be seen if consumers will embrace a modular phone once Google delivers it. That's expected in a few months as the project team is aiming to launch a limited $50 modular handset this coming January. So would you like a modular cell phone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. What's interesting about this, to me, is that it gives you the option to have whatever phone you want at the moment you have it. So if I can only afford 3 or 4 modules, I want to be able to make a call, I want to have memory, of course, and I want to be able to take a picture. But later on, I think, wouldn't it be great if I could add sensors to do whatever they are, right?
Now a better camera to take better pictures.
Or a better camera comes along, or I make a few bucks and I want to add a camera, which I didn't have the first time. What really I think is going to make this win or lose is going to be advertising, and Google doesn't do that very well, but we'll see. I love the idea of that camera, of that phone. And think about it. You buy the phone on, say, AT&T, and then you decide you want to switch to Verizon. You can just swap out the radio, and now you've got a phone that'll work on Verizon's network.
Yep.
So it's a really interesting idea, really very clever idea. And eventually you'll be able to sell modules to people, right? I've got some used memory. It's still good. I just bought more. I just bought a different memory module. Or
yeah,
my old camera. I'm selling my old camera. It cost me $50. I'm selling it for $30, whatever that is. I think it's ridiculously clever, and I hope it succeeds. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's up?
I'm having some problems with my internet service. Can I name the company?
I don't know. Can you? Yeah. Go ahead.
It's from Frontier.
Okay.
And it's a bit unusual, but I lost the service on Wednesday. Came back for a while on Thursday. It's been out Friday and out again today. You have any insight as to what's happening?
Probably your DSLAM. They've got problems at your DSLAM.
I don't understand what you just said.
Yeah, that's what I was going to clarify. What can happen is in an area with the DSL, it's a point from how far you are from the central area where you get connected. There is what they call a DSAM, a switching station.
It stands for Digital Subscriber Line Access Multiplexer, and it's where all the lines come in from your neighborhood and turn into one line that goes back to the trunk.
And right now, you could be overloaded to the point that, you know, they need to maybe put in another DSLAM in that area or trunk you off to another direction because it is a distance thing.
One thing to check, though, first is it could be an issue with the phone line, or it could be an issue with the router in your house.
Well, we've restarted the router several times, and I did it at times under direction from their service desk.
And it could also, though, be from the house to the pole. So this is right, the season where squirrels are starting to build nests and everything else, and they get in there and they chew on the wires and the boxes.
Let me help you a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
They've now acknowledged that it's what they call a common problem, a common core problem, something like that. And mm-hmm. I have at least one friend who's a couple months experiencing the same thing.
It sounds like it's a Frontier problem, and there's nothing you can do about it until they fix it.
Yeah, it's probably somewhere in the central office. Somewhere in the central office, and they're working on it, I'm sure, to fix it.
Well, I'm sure they're working on it, too.
Yeah.
But it seems to be we've gone several days here. One thing would be helpful is if they started to acknowledge what the nature of the problem is so they don't keep disgruntled customers out here.
I would have them come out and check your service from the house to the pole. Just, they might have to string a new line there. I've seen that happen, too.
One thing you can do may not help now is...
D-slam. I would think if they got a loading problem, this didn't happen just instantaneously. It should have been growing.
It could also be old equipment, and they're going to replace it. But you know, they don't keep a whole D-slam sitting around in the back room under the hope that one will fail somewhere. So they may be waiting on parts. It could be a whole bunch of different things. I'm sure that they're going to fix it as well as they can. One thing you can do is keep track of the lost days and ask Frontier if they will reimburse you for them.
And here's the other thing. You say that this wouldn't happen right overnight. Yes, that is very true. It also depends on people's computer habits. You're starting to get into the fall. More folks are home spending more time on the computer. They're not outside as much. So you might see this problem build slowly, but it does happen. And it's something that could have been there, but it took more folks to all of a sudden come from the outside and now spending more time on the inside because that's just the nature of the way things are right now.
Well,
and
you'd make a really good argument, except the last 5 days have been terrific outdoor days.
Yeah, but still, no. I mean, this
overall,
is on you. This is overall, yes.
Well, you know what? The thing really is we aren't Frontier, and I can't tell you what the problem actually is or how to fix it. But my suspicion is that it's in the D-slam, and my expectation is that they're in the process of
I was curious more or less if you heard from anyone else who has been experiencing
Not yet. And, of course, if it's in your D-slam, if it's in your central office, it would only affect the people in your area.
How many might that be?
Depends
tens
on...
Tens of thousands?
A thousand?
No, it depends. It's like a distance, and it's from wherever the D-slam is, and it's a radius.
It's generally less than 5 miles
right.
in a D-slam.
No, I understand
five
that.
5-mile radius.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the number of people.
Yeah, it could
there
be tens of thousands.
That are without service. I'm convinced of that now. Okay? After a while, the poor people that have to take the calls will begin to admit.
Yes and no, but also remember the fact that Frontier Internet service is the second one in Rochester. Time Warner has far more customers than Frontier does. So there may be tens of thousands of people in an area, but only a small percentage of them will actually have DSL service.
Well, I think they're about to have one less.
Well, I understand. I understand being angry about that.
Is there any way to get some sort of a backup service that you can tap into on occasion, if as needed?
Well, you pay for a second service, but you pay monthly.
But my point is, you have to pay for it continuously.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know of anybody who allows dial-up this week but not last week or something.
Okay.
Personally, I'm still waiting for green light, but I guess I won't talk about that.
Yeah. Another service.
Just like
provider,
you were waiting for Fios.
Is that progressing?
I haven't heard from them in a month and a half, but I'm sure hoping so because we were supposed to be soon on the list. And I get it. You know, they're not the
hey, Christmas is coming.
Well, the other people who do this are not going to... I'm not eager to help them compete. I get that. I do understand that. But my hope is that I will have that soon.
Okay. Well, your point about getting 5 days of service, the cost of 5 days of service is not the problem.
Yeah.
It is
right. The frustration of not having it.
Things that you need to do those days.
Right. No, I absolutely get it. We have come to the point where our internet service is not a luxury.
That's correct.
And it's still being it's still being priced like a luxury,
mm-hmm.
but that's all to the good for them. But yeah, I agree with you. I don't if I lost my internet service for a day, there would be blood somewhere in my home, either for me or my wife.
One thing you can do that sort of is a backup internet service is if you have a smartphone with cellular hotspot feature, then you can turn that hotspot on to access the internet on your computers and your tablets.
And that's what my friend is doing. His wife has a smartphone, and he set up a hotspot.
Yeah.
But now, unless you have unlimited data, that's going to cost you a lot of money.
You're going to pay more for that data. But
if you just needed to do it for a short interval.
Paying for the data you're using, yeah.
That would be one way of getting some redundancy there, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Right, exactly right.
Okay. Let me also say, I think haven't experienced this, and I've had good success in the past, but there's a point where they ought to be promoting how well they do with their uptime.
Well, and that's something so that nobody does well, isn't it? I mean, when I was working, now that I'm retired and only teaching 3 days a week.
Yeah, right.
But when I was working, I used to send my boss monthly updates, you know, 99.99% uptime, this many people helped, this much done. Because tooting your own horn is the only way you're going to get anybody. Nobody else toots your horn, right? So what Frontier really ought to do is send to all their customers X amount of uptime. We had 2 days of lost service here, which turns out to be, you know, 1% or 2% or whatever.
But if I'm in that 1% that was down, I'd be mad when I see 99.99% up.
I suppose so. I suppose so. Yeah.
Well, Nick, I think you make a good point. I'd much rather see some statistics like that than I would the latest low price for 2 months on bundling.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but the advertising and the promotions people command everything, it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're separate from the tech support people and the service people.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
And unfortunately, because of the duopoly system where you generally only have two internet providers in any given area, you can switch to the other one and that'll be fine until they have a problem.
Right.
And then you'll switch back and forth.
Exactly right. All right. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you, it is 20 minutes after the hour. And we are Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Don from Greece on the line. Welcome, Don. What's up?
Good afternoon. Just wanted to comment on the previous caller.
Sure.
I had the same type of problem with the more popular provider in the area, and over more than a year, and the solution was replacing all of the cable from the room all the way out to the box.
Yeah.
Finally, because I work at home, I now support both providers so that I don't have that problem again.
Right. And that's just the cost of doing business.
Yeah. My question relates to my iMac all-in-one. It's 3 years old, past Apple Care. And intermittently, the bottom quarter of the screen, exactly one quarter of the screen, turns darker and gray, and there's a lot of hash back and forth, although you can still read what's there. It goes on and off. Is that likely to be something with the video system?
Yeah, it sounds like the video card.
Is that worth repairing on a three-year-old Mac?
Probably. I've actually got two of them in the shop, 2008 models, that the video card has failed. Generally what we're seeing is that repair is in the $350-$400 range for parts and labor. And a lot of times that's about as much as you'd want to spend to repair an old machine, because a new one is $1,100. That's sort of how we approach that with customers. You look at what the cost of repair is versus what the cost of buying new is.
Is this a recurring problem that Apple might be induced to pay for?
Sorry.
Occasionally, they do have what they call their repair extensions or quality programs.
Yeah.
I have not seen anything about a video card problem.
I've looked for that online and not found anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just the age. Things eventually break.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Sure. Yeah. It's always the hardest question to answer. Why did it break? Sunspots.
Right.
Yeah. It's old.
Why do light bulbs burn out?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Something happened somewhere that something didn't like. It's nothing you did.
Well, that's heat stress.
Yeah.
Light bulbs.
It's probably nothing you did, although pouring the glass of whiskey down the back of the computer didn't help. But yeah, so it's always that problem. We kind of joke about it with used cars, that you buy a used car, or as your car gets old, eventually the repair bills start getting more and more frequent, and you got to decide to replace it. And I always had a joke when I was a kid. We had this old car, and every time it needed something fixed, Dad would say, "Well, we should just sell it," but we can't make any money when it's broken, so let's fix it, and then we can sell it. Well, once it's fixed, we don't need to sell it. And so we had that old Dodge. I went to college with that old Dodge.
Yep. And kept on fixing it.
Kept on fixing it. Yep.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I went out last night. Everything was hunky-dory. When I came home this morning, my computer was dead. There was nothing. And so I've taken the cover off, and there's no light at all inside. So I'm basically thinking my power supply is probably
kaput.
Probably,
well,
yeah.
A couple of questions. What kind of computer is this?
Yep. It's a white box.
Okay.
So not going to help you a lot, but it's a Corsair TX750 power supply.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. And do you have, is it plugged into a strip, and do you know if the strip works?
It is plugged into a strip. I've changed strips. I've actually changed cords.
Yeah, that's the easiest thing to check first. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. All right, yep, sounds like you're down to the power supply.
Yeah, when you turn it on, though, usually you'll see the fan in back of this power supply.
Yep.
Turn, start spinning.
No.
Yep, time for your power supply.
Sometimes there's a little green light.
I can try replacing.
Yeah.
Because I've spent 45 minutes on the Corsair side, around the net, just trying to see if there's a fuse inside the power supply.
No. There is a fuse, but no, nothing that you would replace. When something like that goes, you definitely want to replace it. And
that's just a symptom of something else is going to go next.
And if you're comfortable with that, they're really not that hard to do. Just kind of make a note of what you're doing. Excuse me, as you unplug, you know, various devices that you rehook power back up to them.
Right.
And there's usually three connectors that you've got to hook up. Two for the main part of the power supply, and then there is another four-prong plug closer towards the CPU.
Okay. Is there any brand? I mean, I've never had a power supply go on me, and I keep my computers for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it happens. You
want to get the same wattage. So if it's a 400 watt power supply or a 350 or a 375, you want to get the same one. And you can go to local places around here, pick up a power supply. Key thing again, too, is when you take that cover off,
yeah,
you're going to unplug it, of course, touch the metal case.
I'll use a grounding strap and things like
that. Yeah, that's even better yet. But
also, when you take that cover off after you pull the power plug,
yeah,
hold the power button in for a few seconds, just in case there's some charge left in some of those capacitors.
Okay.
Drain a little bit of it out.
Nick does. Nick gets. I gotta explain this.
That's the thing that they recommend.
No. I'm going back to the times when I had to come over to your house a couple times.
I sweat watching you work in my computer. When I was a kid, I saw my father get thrown across the room working with a wall socket.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I have been unable to handle things with electricity.
Oh, like I told you, it was when I was in my shop down on Brighton Henrietta Town Line Road on the backside, just the backside. I was down there late one night and I had a monitor, big tube monitor. I pulled the cover off of that just to blow it out. I put my hand in there and I hit a capacitor. That threw me across the wall, to the wall, slammed me up against the wall. Nobody was there except KC, the bird.
Right.
And I had to lay there for a good 15, 20 minutes.
Yep.
Am I going to have issues size-wise fitting a new one in? Or
no. Shouldn't. Like I say, take the old one with you.
Yeah.
Take it out.
I really like the guys over at Frozen CPU. They really know their stuff, and they have huge racks and racks of stuff build with.
I love their cases. If you ever get a chance, go to their place. Also, look at their website, frozencpu.com. They have every toy you've never even thought of buying for your computer.
It's a very dangerous place to go.
It's a very dangerous place to go.
Like I say, I like the liquid cool systems.
Yeah, yeah.
A friend of mine had a saying that software begets software and hardware begets hardware.
Oh, it is so true.
Yes.
It is so true.
and the connector should be the same. I shouldn't have any problem with that. But,
again, if you bring the old one with you, they'll match it up.
There are 20-pin connectors and 24-pin connectors, so depending on which one you need, you have to make sure you get the right one.
Right. And do you have remember what road these guys are on?
They're in East Rochester.
Look them up in the yellow pages.
Hold on,
I'm looking them up here. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I can't.
Yeah.
Look them up or go to their website. I'm sure they have something there.
Okay.
Or any one of the fine retail establishments in town.
Exactly.
Yep.
There's plenty of places around that you can look up and go to.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Yep. Thanks.
And for previous caller Don, there is a video card replacement program. If you have a certain model of 27-inch iMac manufactured between May 2011 and October 2012 with the Radeon 6970 video card in it, Apple is replacing those video cards up to 4 years after the date of purchase. So if your computer's only is you said it was just over 3 years old, it may be eligible for this program if you have that video card in it, which you can check from the Apple menu under About This Mac and the System Profiler, the Radeon 6970 video card. So there are occasionally video card recalls. There was one for the Mac Pros for a while that has since ended, but every now and then they do find problems with their cards and replace them. I remember AMD, it was NVIDIA had a huge problem with their video cards, and there were some 2008 and 2009 laptops that the video card in the laptop would die, and Apple was fixing those for free for 4 years. That's generally what we see the repair extensions is they'll fix it for 4 years from the date of purchase.
So check it out and get it in there.
Yep,
right away.
You can make an appointment at any Apple service center, and including the Mac app that I work
Very
in.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, while we're inadvertently plugging everybody else, I want to thank all of those of you who have purchased my books on Amazon. I'm delighted. Thank you very much. We've had one person review one, and that was nice, too. And I have to figure out what book I want to write next. In my copious spare time.
Oh, yeah.
And this week is also the Apple Cider meeting, Wednesday the 8th at 7 p.m. at East High School. We're going to have a keynote discussion on Rochester genealogy, how to use the internet to obtain genealogy information from, I think he was the vice president of the Rochester Genealogical Society. So if you're interested in genealogy, it's a good thing to go check out.
Yep, the user groups in town are a good place to go to get firsthand knowledge face to face.
Yep,
most of them have most of the members in most of the clubs are very very friendly, willing to help people. In fact, the Lugor group has installed fests every once in a while where you bring your laptop or your desktop and they'll install Linux on it for you. Perfectly legitimate because it's a free operating system, right. So that's all right.
Yep, and it's we talk about this in the Cider board meetings that membership has been dwindling because with the internet, people don't necessarily need this face to face, but a lot of people like the face to face. It's hard to look up things on the internet. It's hard to search for the right terms to find what you're looking for. You usually find too much and don't.
Yep.
Don't find exactly what you need. So having that face-to-face interaction, being able to ask your question and get your question answered is still a great use of the users groups.
Yep.
Well, matter of fact, I was just telling you, I saw Paul Casarino this week, and I was telling Kathy, my fiance, how back in the day, you know, that's how we met Paul, was at the user group, and he used to be in charge of the library. And she goes, library? I go, yeah, back in the day, he used to come with all these boxes full of 3.5 and 5.25-inch floppies. And if you wanted to program, what you do is you bring in an empty disk, go to the library and find the disk that you wanted to have him copy. You put the two together, he'd take it home, and over that month, he would then copy it for you. So when you came back in that month, the following month, there was your program.
I was the librarian for Cider for a while, and we had disk copies of every freeware and shareware program there was, period.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had like 400 or 500 discs.
I was it for a while too before you were, I think.
Probably.
And I had the same thing. And for the Mac in particular, I wrote a HyperCard stack. I hate Apple to this day.
Yeah.
I hate Apple to this day for getting rid of HyperCard, just so you all know. I wrote a HyperCard stack. I would put that in and I would say, you know, who the person was, their name, their address, type all that in, check which disc they wanted. It would then print me a receipt and prompt me, stick this disc in, stick this disc in, stick this disc in, tell me what to label it. So I didn't have to think. I could just, of an evening, you know, because there were an awful lot of people who wanted an awful lot of software.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
So it would take 3 or 4 evenings of this because also we didn't have hard drives at the time. So, you know, when I say stick this disc in, it would be stick in disc number 43 from software pack 27, now stick in the blank disc. Okay, now label it this. Yep. Now you can move on to the next
Especially when we went from the 5 1/4, which held 360, up to the 3 1/2, which at first came out, they were 720. So it's like, oh, double. And then they went to 1.2s. 1.4s.
Yep.
It was like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very, very much bigger, you know, comparatively in those days. I know you think 1.4. And we're talking about megabits, by the way. 1.4 megabytes, not gigabytes.
Yeah.
but that's what we had. And I wish I had a HyperCard-like program for, for the web would be really amazing. But
there have been people that have written HyperCard, rewritten old HyperCard games, Cosmic Osmo and Oregon Trail, for the web. And there is still a HyperCard program from Roger Wagner. I just found this article on Ars Technica. They're calling that the missing link to the web, because the web is hypertext. Everything that HyperCard was on the Mac in the early 80s is what the web eventually became. You see a screen of information, you click on a hyperlink, and that takes you to another page. And that's exactly what HyperCard was.
Right. But HyperCard made it really easy, really simple to do. It was very, very, very cool. And I hate it, my precious. I hate Apple to this day for getting rid of HyperCard. I don't know why they did, and it porks me off. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break while I see if I can adjust my meds. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're still just sitting there listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And if you're watching the video, that was a scary thing.
That was a scary thing. I admit it. We were looking during the break for HyperCard clones that are still available. LiveCode is one, and it really is an excellent product, but it's probably not something I'm ever going to actually pay for. There's something called Python Card, but I don't know how old it is. We found a site that was, the last entry was in 2011, so pretty unlikely that they're still in business, but let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joel. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Reading this morning's paper, it looks like there were 9 more banks in addition to J.P. Morgan that were hacked, and I was just wondering if you guys had any insights on that and if there's anything people should be doing.
Here's the thing. What happened was 70 million email addresses, names and addresses, and that stuff were stolen from J.P. Morgan Chase. They say no credit card numbers, none of that, no bank numbers, none of that stuff. Okay, maybe. But basically, the deal here is what you should do is make contact with the bank to find out if you're one of those people. There were 70 million of them, which sounds like an awful lot, but compared to the number of people who actually have money in a Chase bank, it's not that many. So call them up and find out if you're one of those people. If you are, demand that they pay for credit monitoring for at least a year.
Which most of these these breaches, they do for you. We talked about that with Home Depot a few weeks ago.
Right. I say they demand it. They'll do it. The likelihood is if you haven't been, if nobody from Chase has made contact with you, then you're unlikely to actually be in that group.
And if additional banks were part of that Chase, because Chase is such a large, it's the largest bank in the U.S. by assets, then similar issues for those other banks. There's some basic things you should do just in case you think you might be part of that. Change your password for any online bank accounts that you do use. And check your online account history every day or so. I do, but you know, right. at least once a week to make sure there's no fraudulent charges there.
Well, if you
don't
think
wait
you
until
were
the
one
end
of
the month,
people who was hit, look every day, yeah. Look twice a day.
Yeah, don't wait until the end of the month to
get
your printed statement.
Don't get lazy about your savings, for God's sake.
And what a pain in the butt that is.
Yeah,
oh, I've been through it. I just
had to do it because of the Home Depot thing.
Yep.
sent me another card, and it's like, oh, tired. Now I got to sit there and try to remember all the places that I have that it does like automatic, like say just my Easy Pass.
Yep, and which you won't remember, and then you'll get the bounce notice.
Yeah. It's like, really?
Yeah. So a lot of the banks have just automatically reissued new cards to customers.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a pain in certain parts of the anatomy.
Yeah.
And
side of my lap.
Yeah. And it's almost a non-story. Every week there's another company.
Well, and we've been talking about this. I teach a couple of security classes, and we've been talking about this. The breach.
But you're retired.
Yeah. Maybe next semester.
He retired from one school. He's teaching at a different one.
Yeah.
Right. I'm teaching at RIT.
Yeah,
and MCC, I'm an idiot. I should be sitting around with my feet up, but instead.
They're paying your retirement and they're paying you to teach? You're a smart man.
There is that. But the breach was through someone, somebody's password. They got into somebody's machine via their password, which just goes to show that no matter how secure the backroom people were keeping Chase, the fact that somebody used the same password they used on Facebook or the same password they used on Twitter or somewhere else, that gets hacked. They've got a password that now works somewhere else as well. How do you even protect against that? So I'm positive that Chase has been in contact with the people who were hit, but it would not hurt you to call your Chase branch and tell them I need to know if I was part of that breach. Is that semi clear?
Okay, thanks, guys.
There you go.
Yep.
And
sort of on the good side of that, you're only legally liable for $50 of fraudulent charges. And most banks waive that anyway.
But, well, the bad side is like Dave said, you have to get a new credit card and
go through all of them trying to remember what you used.
I had just memorized the number on my old credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh yeah, same here.
Yeah, but you need to.
And it's especially important not to use the same password on multiple sites. We had a customer come into the shop today. or this week, his Google account got breached. They were able to guess his password using his security questions, and they sent email to his banks asking for a replacement credit card to be shipped to his new address because he just moved. So pretty sophisticated crooks.
Mm-hmm.
And using the same password on, say, your Google account and then your Amazon account and your Chase account and your PayPal account. Now, the bad guys will try that that password on every other place that might have money in it to try to steal more of your money.
And let's talk about your security question. Yeah. Your security question is simply text. So lie.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is, you know, use something like KeePass and keep track of your passwords and your lies of your security question and make it a real lie. Like if somebody says, what was your favorite old television show that's not on anymore? Why, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, lie outrageously.
Because the bad guys will go through the iforgot.yahoo.com or iforgot.gmail.com, whatever, and they will try to answer those questions. And then the more persistent ones, and that's we talk about the Matt Honan case from Wired a couple of years ago. They actually called Apple and Amazon, because they got into both of the accounts, called on the phone and said, hi, you know, I'm Matt. I don't remember the answer to my questions.
Yep.
And was able to talk their way past the people on the phone to get a temporary password to get into the account.
Social engineering.
Yeah, it's much easier to call somebody up and, hi, I'm you know, Fred from IT. I need your password. 99% of the time, the person on the phone will give it to you.
And because, as we used to learn at my old job at Logical Operations, June says, it's nice to be nice. Mm-hmm. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheektowaga, New York. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Well,
you were ready too, weren't you, Joe?
To one of your unfortunate callers before that had his DSL service was not working.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just want to caution that if you do tethering, the carriers don't like that. They often put it in their terms of service. You have to pay extra for tethering.
Yeah,
you know, the Wi-Fi hotspot. And yep. Why they even care? Because data is data.
Well, they want to charge you more for the data.
Oh, of course.
Right. It depends. If you have Verizon bought some Spectra that were originally public, and part of the deal was they had to let people continue to tether.
So didn't heard of that.
Yeah. If you're a Verizon customer, you have the legal right to tether.
At no additional charge.
At no additional charge.
But AT&T. Charges you. Right.
Not to give these nefarious people any ideas, don't you think if you wanted to infiltrate a lot of accounts, don't you think you'd go after people like Cyber Systems, LastPass, OnePass, all those? Then you'd have a plethora of accounts to get into, not just J.P. Morgan Chase.
But the security companies are generally a little more secure themselves.
Yeah,
and so you go after the easier target. And with the Chase one, the one story I read was a flaw on a website that hadn't been patched yet, probably a SQL injection flaw. And so they were able to get into the back door and read the customer list.
And if, for example, I'm using KeePass, if you were to actually steal my KeePass file, it's encrypted 1024 bits. It's going to take you... What?
That'd be tough to crack.
Exactly. So go ahead and crack it. Honestly, by the time you do, I suspect I won't care anymore. At the very least, I'll have changed all my passwords.
And I really feel for you, Nick. Same thing happened with me. You know, I got a message from my credit card company saying, well, we suspect we're part of this Home Depot problem, and we're going to send you a new card, and your present card won't work past the 5th of next month.
What a pain it was.
Yeah, well, you know, I think what you need to do, though, is go through, say, at least a quarter of statements, if not a year of statements, and look for those charges, because I have my power bill that automatically gets charged and my Time Warner bill that automatically gets charged and all that. So it would be helpful if you just review statements for those automatic charges. Then you know those are the sites you have to go to.
Well, in my case, it was... I actually got a phone call from my bank. I'm not at Chase. I got a phone call from my bank, and they said, did you just buy two mink coats in Florida? I said, no, I did not. And they said, well, in that case, we believe your credit card has been stolen. We're canceling it right now. Well, that's great, except it's Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I can't even talk to them about it until Monday. That's stuff. Ah, well. Listen, thanks for calling.
Fun things of the modern world, huh?
Exactly. Yeah, first world problems. All right. Thanks a lot. We'll see you, Joe. Have fun. That's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week. Everybody tries to get in at the last minute. I do not understand that at all. We have a whole lot of show, 2 hours of it. You can get in earlier. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away, because George is going to come in and play the best German music you will hear all week long. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so it's likely it won't be too bad. So we'll see you all next Saturday with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Just 166 hours to a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.